So I was asked to talk about the athletic hip. I don't have every entity in here again. I wanted to hit kind of the main concept, but also point out some things that you certainly will see on the sidelines. You'll have kind of the first steps in treatment. So I want to talk about kind of the etiology of hip pain, a couple of the various roles in treatment and approaches, and then and maybe touch a little bit on some of the pitfalls and areas that I want some heightened awareness from people who are on the front line. So I would consider all you guys the front lines, and a lot of times we don't get to help if it's not recognized by people who are out there every day taking care of the players and making a huge difference. So case one, this is a 14-year-old male, left hip pain playing soccer. Who covers soccer? All right, have you ever heard of this story? I'm not making this up. Okay, yes, exactly. You're like, oh gosh. Left hip pain while playing soccer. Well, kicking the ball, taking a free kick. I mean, just muscling it up. Now he's limping, okay? So limping, pain with fader, and I'll explain what that is. Most of you probably know that abbreviation, but the fader testing, so flexing his hip, adducting and internally rotating it, but also pain with resisted hip flexion and straight leg raise. So this is an x-ray. This is the front view and this is a side view. Anybody wanna take a guess at what they see? Or you may know the diagnosis just by the history, which is nice. So avulsion, absolutely right. So AIIS, so there's ASIS, which is the superior one, and then AIIS, which is the inferior one, and that's the one that has the rectus femoris, right, which is commonly, you know, it's the big backswing forward kick, and you can see here a little bony piece that's been displaced, so that's the diagnosis. Great. So I started with that case to say not every hip injury is hip impingement, because there's been this huge push of every, you know, they have a hip problem, it's FAI, it's impingement. Certainly that's a big part of what we see, but not every injury is that, and probably a lot of them are not, and maybe the ones that aren't getting treated and they're persistently painful will be making their ways to the orthopedic surgeons might be the FAIs. But more commonly would be these overuse injuries. So pelvic apophysitis, anybody heard of that? Again, that's like a, you know, now we're on to a Nissan, right? You got a Nissan, pelvic apophysitis. Pretty much anywhere where there's a major muscle insertion, when you're a kid and you have an open growth plate, you have open apophysis. Who knows the difference, which I'm gonna back up a little bit, between apophysis and epiphysis. Anybody wanna tell me the difference? Bingo. Right, so epiphysis contributes to the longitudinal growth of the bone. So that's usually what you see at the joint surface, right? The major ones in the knee, the ankle, elbow, wrist, versus apophysis, exactly right. They still allow the growth of that bone, but they're not really the longitudinal growth. And so we see a lot of muscles that attach there. And again, it's the Oreo cookie analogy. It is the weaker spot. Same thing when you've got a strong person, open growth plates, tight muscles, huge amount of force pulling through those. And at some point, you can make it where they can come disconnected. So again, we see it runners, dancers, track athletes, hurdlers, we'll see this, lacrosse, football. If you have tightness, that gives you increased strain on those muscle insertions, which is gonna be increased strain through that cartilage. And there'll be kind of one of two stories. Achiness progresses after I do the activity. Who's heard that story? So it's fine when I start, sore when I'm finished, may limp a little bit, ice it, next day I'm fine again, and then hit the repeat button. The other would be more the avulsion. I was fine. I went to kick a soccer ball. Or you hear that in soccer, but it's the track athlete, right? I was running. I was a little bit sore. Then I was sprinting, felt a pop, and now I'm limping a lot. So those are kind of the two ways that you would hear this. Typically, if it's apophysitis, 3 to 4 weeks of rest, and then can functionally progress. And my hard and fast stop is limping. So to me, there's no reason for anybody to limp ever. It changes the gait. I mean, all of you that are so in tune on that, right? It alters the gait mechanics. It makes bad habits, muscle firing patterns, and then you've got to reverse all that. So I'm very liberal putting people on crutches, single crutch even, just to prevent that. And then again, same thing for me, you're going to see a lot of vitamin D. So I would check it, or I would at least supplement it at a low level and then consider checking it and have had success with that. So the avulsion fractures, these are, again, the athletic hip. These are all around the hip. You see them after the appearance of the secondary ossification center. So when you can see bone, then that's still when it's weak. Kids are growing, they've got a lot of these signaling factors to those growth plates to contribute with longitudinal growth. But you can imagine if you're building a building fast, it's maybe weaker than if you're building it brick by brick, a little bit slower. Same thing, when these kids are in these growth spurts, these rapid phases of growth, they're more vulnerable to injuries to that growth plate. It's more active, it's not as stable because it needs to allow change. If it was extremely stable, it's probably not going to move, which means it's probably not going to give you as much growth. So a lot of times they have antecedent symptoms, right? I had a little bit of soreness. I'll always ask them, I can't walk now. Well, how was it 2 weeks ago? Yeah, I was a little bit sore. Tender, thought it was a pulled muscle, got some treatments, and then didn't get better. So all these areas, sartorius, rectus, glute, iliopsoas, the adductors, the hamstrings, they all have an apophysis. We've all seen them have an avulsion from it. And they're all treated in a similar fashion, usually resting, partial weight bearing, no limp, no low limp. Rarely do they need a surgery. So I'm not aggressive at operating on these. There's some people who think that anybody with a rectus avulsion needs a surgery to prevent impingement. I don't know, that seems kind of aggressive to me. I haven't operated on one yet, and I haven't seen an office full of people that now have impingement from them. So again, not all hip pain is FAI, certainly not all athletic hip pain is FAI, and I would say the minority of it is FAI. So this is an important one for me. This is almost like a public service announcement. So if you're not going to remember anything, if you can remember this, this is probably the most important athletic hip problem that you may not see that may see you. And we won't see it if you don't see it because we're not on the front lines, but this can change a child's course of quality of life, at least. It's not life or death, but certainly can alter their teenage and young adult years if you pick this up versus if you miss it. Okay, this is the knee pain masquerader, right? Who has seen that? Who knows what a slip capital femoral epiphysis is? Gosh, it's such a long term. I want to say skiffy from now on to shorten it, but that's what I'm talking about. So fair number of you have seen it. Maybe more of them have seen you, not sure, but this is something we all miss. Orthopedic surgeons, primary care doctors, trainers, physical therapists, people have had surgery on their knee for this problem. They've had months of therapy for this problem. And you know, shocking, it hasn't gotten better till it's been diagnosed. So in your mind, any child, any adolescent, 8 to 14, with a vague knee pain, right? That's that whole vague knee pain that we talked about earlier. And if they're obese and they have vague knee pain, they have a slip. They have a skiffy until you prove that they don't. Right? Doesn't mean they need an extensive workup, but if you think about it that way in your mind, you're not going to miss this. The problem with this hip problem is that it presents with knee pain a lot of the time. Man, that is, why do they do that? That is so annoying. Right? So it's a referred pain. They're not lying. It's knee pain just like I'm standing here. It's a referred pain. We think it deals with the obturator nerve, but they will tell you, they will bet you $100 it is their knee right here, and this is where it hurts, right in this area. Okay? So you just have to be thinking about it. We check hip range of motion, and I'll go over some of those findings in kind of the how I examine the hip. But these are kids who the hip motion is asymmetric. So you don't have to know all the intricacies, but if you flex up one hip on the knee side that's bad, and it doesn't move the same as the other hip, it moves fine, takes an extra 10 or 15 seconds of your time, you will pick up on this. All right. Obviously, if you're concerned, this is not, hey, we need to send you to a clinic in a couple of weeks. This is, hey, guess what? You're taking a trip down to the hospital, or hey, I've got somebody who is going to see you today in their clinic, because this is a potential big problem. So this is a kid, 2 months of left knee pain, treated as a sprain, went to physical therapy, did not improve, came back, repeat evaluation, and noted that the hip motion was asymmetric. So can anybody see a difference? This is the right hip was fine, the left hip was abnormal. Can anyone see a difference in the x-rays? So once you're thinking about it, it can be pretty obvious. So the hard part is actually putting it in your mind and saying, you're saying knee, but I'm thinking hip here. You know, you're 12 years old, you're more of a D lineman, right? You're walking a little bit differently. So this is two x-rays, this is an AP pelvis. And this is called a frog pelvis, right? So the legs come up and out to the side. And what you can see is, even if you don't see a lot of these x-rays, is they brought their right side. So most of them will bring their good side with you to examine. super nice to use. I like to, unless they have one, unless they're only unilateral, then I would take the answer key, right? So probably should look like this. Probably should look like this, right? So can everybody see the difference between this, the right side and the left side? Right. So that's a Skiffy. That's that ball. The analogy I use is the ice cream scoop on the ice cream cone. It's a hot day in Texas, right? Off to the side. That's what this is. Okay. The problem is if we miss this. So he had 2 months of this pain treated in physical therapy. I've now had two in the past month that were seen. One was diagnosed, one wasn't diagnosed, but they were kind of in the middle of their workup. And both of them were on crutches, and both of them tripped on crutches, and both of them did this, right? And so what happens is it's weak, it's loose, and if you have an injury, the ice cream scoop goes off the side completely. And that's the problem. So if we fix it before it's totally loose, like the one in the x-ray before, there's a 0% chance or so of avascular necrosis. Who's heard of that? AVN? Yeah, mostly everybody, right? Who wants AVN in a 13-year-old kid? Boo, right? Yeah, nobody. If you're 50, it's not fun, but we've got total joints to do amazing, right? A total hip is a great procedure. It's not that we don't like the procedure, but nobody wants to do that on a kid that's still growing, 13-year-old, 15-year-old. But if this becomes unstable, it's anywhere from 30 to 100% chance of avascular necrosis. So that is a huge problem when you're talking about a hip. Not many high school sports will let you play if you've had a hip replacement. All right, fortunately, we don't test that water very often, but that's what happens, okay? Questions about that? If you don't remember anything today from me, remember that. So otherwise, the hip. I'm going to assume I'm a hip surgeon, so the hip is more the center of my world, but have to have the GYN hat just enough to recognize that it might not be the hip or the spine, just enough to realize that it might be the spine or the vascular surgeon, right? So when you guys are seeing it the first time, and the patient perception of hip is not the provider's understanding of what is hip. I think if you kind of make sure you're taking that step, because I'm a very trusting person. If my hip hurts, I'm like, okay, well, let's look at your hip, right? But what you need to say is, my hip hurts, okay. Well, let me see if what you think hip is the same as what I think hip is, right? So hip to the patient may be back to you, maybe abductor glute, maybe groin, maybe hernia, right? I mean, it could be a lot of different things. And so just a very beginning of your exam, just saying, hey, is this the same hip that I'm thinking and that you're thinking, okay? So we're going to kind of move forward assuming that it's actually hip, okay? That's the rest of this talk is assuming that it's hip. Great picture, helps me understand hip pathology. Who has seen patients who are taking care of people, or maybe you yourself, you have FAI if somebody took an x-ray, but you're fine. You've never had pain, you've never had any issues, you've done everything you wanted to do, and you know, leave me alone, don't mess with me, right? I mean, there's plenty of us in here whose hips do not look normal if we examine them. I have a tight hip, okay, well so. Or if you got an x-ray, I have a big cam. And that's because we believe hip disease is like this, right? So it's not normal, abnormal, right? It's this center of a happy hip, this green zone. And then you have all of these things that try to push it into the hip disease, which is that gray area, right? And I have the article this comes from, it's a great, great article to read, but it gives me that understanding. So you can have abnormal appearance and be totally fine if you're hip. And that's why non-operative treatment can work on problems of the hip that don't look normal, right? So not all impingement needs a surgery, because if it's sitting in this little arc right in that gray area and you decrease their activity, boom, their pain goes away, they're happy, you never see them again. Okay, so think about it in this light, because it's not an automatic, oh, you have hip impingement, you need a surgery, blah, blah, blah. And there are some people that think along those lines, but I try to think of it like this. So there's lots of things inside the joint. Who's never heard any talks about the hip before? Anybody, it's their first look at the hip? Okay, good. So you know the laundry list. There's lots of things inside the hip that can cause problems. There's also lots of things outside the hip that can cause problems. And when they're a layer separating them is the capsule. Sometimes it's very difficult to differentiate the hip outside and the hip inside. And so we use some certain tests. We use imaging, which is an advantage that we have. Use some imaging to help us through that. So I'm always asking, where does it hurt? Well, my hip. Okay, point with one finger. Can you point with one finger where it hurts, right? So this may be hip to a lot of people, right? This is hip, this is hip, this is hip. Sometimes hips even higher. People have high hips. Or is it, oh man, it hurts right here. This is kind of that C sign. Everybody see that? Sorry, I'm blocking some of you, but the C, right? This is the C, they guard the side of their hip. Man, that hurts right there. Does it limit them? How can they reproduce it? I love it when they can reproduce it, right? Who goes to the mechanic and they've got this squeak in their car and they cannot show the mechanic? Does anybody tell me I'm not the only one that said that? Okay. It's hard because a lot of patients have rested, right? Maybe they've had some training sessions and they're feeling better, but they went back to running, it hurts, so then they come back to you, but they haven't really flared it up and their exam is totally normal. That's a really tough one. You kind of have to make a little story up for them. But if they have associated symptoms, right, mechanical symptoms, this is something catching, locking. Every time I turn this way, it grabs and then it lets go and I'm fine again, right? That's something you're trying to pick up on. And one truth when you're looking at these hips is the labrum. It's painful. Both to the therapist, trainers, surgeons, I mean, it's a painful structure. Because we want to know, is the labrum the problem or is it the underlying problem? So another analogy I use is the canary in the mine shaft. Anybody familiar with that? Maybe some younger people don't know what that is. But right, if the canary is the labrum and you go and you swap out the canary, right? That's like having a labral surgery and you fix the labrum, but their underlying problem is a big impingement or their hip is shallow, right? They may be fine for a couple of years or 6 months or 8 months, and then, doc, yep, I was great for 2 years, and now it's hurting me again, same exact way. A lot of times you have to think of it like this. So you can get labral tear, especially in our athletes, right? So you'll see it, right? It's repetitive hip flexion, pivoting, changing directions. Tons of hockey players get it. You can have skeletal deformities and have it. And so the big one, this is the not every hip issue is FAI, but you certainly want to know about that and be able to think about it because you don't want to treat the same patient for a groin strain that really has impingement for months and months and months. So femoral acetabular impingement is an abnormal shape. So you have to have two things, abnormal shape of the bones and then abnormal contact. So you can have abnormal shape and that's not FAI. That's femoral acetabular morphology. That's just how you're built. I sit at a desk or, you know, I don't run anymore very often and so my hips don't hurt at all, but I could have femoral acetabular morphology. The impingement implies the condition. It's like multidirectional laxity versus MDI, multidirectional instability. Does that make sense? Everybody, okay. So a couple types, CAM is the one with the bump. So who's heard of that, CAM? It's in the news, it's very popular to talk about FAI, but just wanted to show you some pictures of it. But this is what it looks like. You get a bump in the hip, and instead of gliding in when you move, it bumps up, it damages the cartilage in the labrum. And then the pincer would be the socket is overgrown, and so instead of sliding through to there, the labrum, it crushes it when you flex up. So those are kind of the two types. You'll definitely see those in correspondence to, you know, if you're talking with your surgeon or your sports medicine doctor. So these kids, the ones I like to see really are the deep flexion. It hurts when I go down for a squat. I've always been tight in my squats, and when I turn, I've had to turn my foot position. Don't like to sit in the car a lot. Long car rides, driving to see you, Dr. Mansour, my hips started hurting. Sometimes it can be posterior pain, right? So they can still have hip impingement. But they may be having such a big bump that they actually lever posteriorly and create some posterior hip pains. This is an x-ray. Again, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. It's hard for me to not show an x-ray because a lot of what I do is looking at them all day. So this is doesn't project very well, but this is a well-centered x-ray. And if we look at the socket, so this is non-arthritis. Right side, left side. Left side's painful, and what you can see very faintly is this shadow here, and I've outlined it. So that's the wall, the lining of the socket. So on the right side, can you see the blue doesn't overlap the purple? Everyone see that? On the right side, on the left side it does. I have it outlined. You have to trust me that I didn't make those lines up. But that shaded area is the overhang or the pincer. And if we go to a lateral view and draw some circles here, you can see what exits that circle. So this would be normal. Down this side of the green. So all the bone you see on the top part of the green, that's the bump. That's the extra impinging bone. So that's the red area. See where it exits that circle? Does that project well? Do y'all see that in the back? Maybe? Okay. Brian, can you see that? So that shaded area, that's the CAM. All right, here's another more obvious example. You can see on the side, that lateral view, this is actually the ski ramp here. And you can imagine this trying to get inside of the socket is not a healthy place for it. All right, so a couple key points for this is morphology does not equal impingement. So yes, they could have tight hips. Yes, you could get x-rays, and yes, they're gonna be tight. We do that for our NFL combine and NBA combine players. We see their hips are tight. They haven't had an injury, they have no missed time, no symptoms. We get x-rays, they have a huge cam, and we really can't say anything more than they have morphology, and we have to watch it if they start to have symptoms. So the biggest thing, though, when you're treating it from a trainer standpoint, from a therapist standpoint, is if it's a problem of impingement, you're not gonna stretch their hips out, right? So that's probably the big message is sometimes tight hips are because the bones knock each other, or the bones trying to slide in the socket and damage the cartilage, and forcing that may get them more motion, but it will be at the expense of irritating their hip. And a lot of times people will fail therapy because they've been taken through kind of the stretching, get you more motion, this will make you better kind of thought process, and you have to be, it's a different mindset. We use corticosteroids at times as well, and that can also be successful. So really the goals, and I'll just briefly on this, the surgical treatment is to treat the underlying sources. Okay, so labral tear, again, if you have these athletes and they have a labral tear, you want to make sure that you're treating the cause of the labral tear and the mechanical overload. There's a couple ways we can do it, right? Arthroscopically, who's seen a hip arthroscopy? Anybody seen one? Okay. So small incisions, it's kind of, you know, sexy to talk about, oh, we can do it through these little bitty small poke holes, we can laser surgery or whatever you hear. Really for me, it's about understanding, can I do what I need to do to fix the underlying problem with the tools that we have? So for me, arthroscopy is a tool. If you need to repair, reconstruct, resect, or release something, then you can do that arthroscopically. There's a fifth one that, has anybody seen it? A acetabular osteotomy, any type of bone osteotomy. So pretty new. Some of you, yep, Zach, my med student back there, has definitely seen them. So if you want to add the fifth R, reorient, it's a very powerful way to help and correct some of these underlying morphologies. And it's interesting, Brian's here, some of you guys that take care of our bigger hip patients, some of them with these giant surgeries are happier than trying to do something through a little laser, tiny incision. So it's all about figuring out that diagnosis, understanding the underlying mechanics of it. So again, hip arthroscopy, that's what you'll see in practice, you know, if you have orthopedic colleagues that you consult with and that share some athletes, most of your high school athletes would be treated with hip arthroscopy. So I'll close with a few pictures. If you haven't seen hip arthroscopy, this is how you get in. This is a needle, beautiful socket here, labrum here, and the cartilage the ball and socket. So you can see this is a tiny needle. We've got everything blown up. This is like a 20-gauge needle or 16-gauge needle. And this is the hole that you have. So there's not a lot of margin for error getting in there, but you can do a rim resection where you can correct some of that abnormality. And that's what we're doing here. You can fix the labrum, which is what is shown on this picture. And then you can go and you can address this bump. Can everybody see kind of the circle here? And it extends. This is doesn't show up very well with the coloring, but this would be trimming it down. So this would be before, and you can see a bump of bone here. And then afterwards, you can see labrum is fixed. The cartilage has been, or the bone has been trimmed down to allow it to glide in under the socket. So it's successful, right? Really, the treatment that the patient needs is going to be the most successful treatment, right? That sounds kind of silly, but that's the reality. I think a lot of times we're not giving them poor treatment. We're just not matching the treatment with what they actually need. So in open surgery, arthroscopic surgery, tools for fixing some of these hip problems in the athletes can be a pretty successful return. So in closing, hip pain can be different injuries in and around the socket. It's not all impingement, right? That's take home number one. Take home number two, actually I don't have one here, would be adolescent, obese, knee pain, think Skiffy, please. One thing that you remember. And a lot of this stuff, because of that picture that I showed you with the green circle and the gray circle, a lot of this can be treated successfully with good therapy. And really, you want to figure out the underlying cause. And a lot of times, I'm seeing the patient 10 minutes in the office for a very static exam. You guys have seen them every day for 5 weeks, and you know everything that triggers it and everything that makes it better, and that's huge. And so we can help in a collaborative effort figure out the underlying cause for some of these problems. So that we don't just replace the canary. Okay, thank you.